Welcome to Fresh Research, a podcast from the nonprofit Times. We explore some of the most interesting and sometimes provocative findings focused on the world of nonprofits. Thanks for tuning in. Here at the nonprofit Times, we see tons of great fresh research. So in each episode, we take a recent study or survey and have a conversation with the authors about what they found and why they think it's important for charities. We'll also give away some books and give you access to other valuable information from the nonprofit Times.
When the Nonprofit Revitalization Act passed in 2013, it was the first major overhaul of nonprofit regulations in New York State in 40 years. The legislation modernized rules around nonprofit boards and committees, and among other things, prohibited nonprofit officers from being present at meetings where their pay is discussed. In the years since, a trio of researchers has examined the effect that one regulation had on executive compensation. Regulating CEO Pay, Evidence from the Nonprofit Revitalization Act, was written by Ilana Babenka, an associate professor in the Department of Finance in the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University, Rick Sen, an associate professor in the School of Banking and Finance at the University of New South Wales, and Benjamin Bennett of Tulane University's A.B. Freeman School of Business. They examined tax data for almost 1,700 nonprofits in New York and found that from 2009 to 2017, CEO pay dropped by 2 to 3% after the act went into effect. At the same time, nonprofit performance improved in terms of larger contributions, more volunteers, and bigger revenues. Nonprofits also were more likely to set up a compensation committee, perform independent compensation review, or adjust pay to be in line with peer organizations. Hi, I'm Mark Rivna for the Nonprofit Times. And now, here's my conversation with Ilana Babenka and Rick Sen. My first question would be, just being in the room, a CEO being in the room with the board, had this much of a difference on compensation?
Yes, we were surprised by results. I do agree with you that this is a relatively minor intervention, right? It's a common sense practice to make the CEO not being present there in the room. And yet it does have tangible results for nonprofits. So our takeaway is actually, well, look, even small change can make a big difference. And this is something that nonprofits should think about implementing, especially in different states and maybe even different countries. But yes, we were surprised by the results.
Let me also add on and say that this fact that CEO should not be in the room has been recognized as an important, potentially important contributor to this the compensation or other issues. For that reason, in fact, in the context of for-profits, the stock exchanges already required this. And they have required this for a while. And presumably it's for good reason. In the US, that I mean, the stock exchanges in the US have been requiring this.
That's interesting. I don't remember seeing that in the report, and I don't think I've heard that before. So that's an interesting note. Thank you for adding that. And I guess, Ilana, you said that other states could do this as well, but I guess there's nothing to stop a nonprofit from setting its own in-house policy to do something like this, or I mean, even as basically as maybe locking the door.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I do think many nonprofits are already doing it. It's just a question that maybe those that need it the most, maybe they are the ones that are not having this practice in place. So imposing it maybe is not a bad idea because, those that are well-behaved and will never abuse power, they're already good, right? We don't need to fix them. But maybe mm-hmm. The other ones need a little bit push in this direction. And, just to be clear, we're not suggesting to regulate pay of nonprofits, right? To say that, look, we have to have caps on salary on this type of pay. This is a much bigger deal and it takes in a whole new direction, right? But just sort of thinking about how this pay is determined, whether directors can speak openly with each other and maybe even discuss the performance of a CEO. If CEO is there and the board says, look, I think there is an issue, right? And the CEO says, well, look, I don't think it's an issue. And the member may be silent and sort of not feeling free to speak on the topic. So I think it's a good practice, common sense, and I think sort of regulation push in this direction is probably not a bad idea, at least given what we know from our research.
Mm-hmm. Well, also what I found interesting was your research found that the same organizations were more likely to set up compensation committees and perform their independent compensation reviews and adjust the salaries with peer organizations when they did this. So it's a matter of let me stick with that one. With just those three items, they were more likely to do all those things that would probably impact salaries in those cases.
Yes and no. So we did find that some boards changed their practices in setting the pay. They started to benchmark pay more against the peers by looking at sort of what the comparable firms are paying to the SEOs. They set up compensation committees, as you mentioned, and so on. Yet what we looked, when we looked at whether this particular practice is contributed to changes in pay, it didn't seem to have a big effect. So it seemed like the big effect was just the CEO not being there rather than these additional practices that the board started to implement. But it was very interesting for us to see because these practices were not required by legislation. They were not sort of anywhere prescribed. They were considered good practices on their own, but they were not sort of obligatory in any way. And yet some boards started to impose them. So
it seems to come down to the relationship between the board and the CEO, because you use a phrase compromised boards, and the legislation seems to reduce the number of those. And by compromise, do you mean just, I guess, too cushy a relationship between the CEO and the board members, that they don't feel like they can say certain things? And
correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. So it's very typical if the CEO is there in the room all the time, the CEO sets the agenda. Well, let's discuss those non-controversial issues and let's not talk much about my performance, right? Or how my pace should be set and so on. So, you know, lots of things can be, prescribed by the CEO setting the tone for the meeting. And if he or she is not there, then it's a different story. The board members have to decide how to think about performance, how to think about pay. And maybe that lends to a more objective process. And at least it leads to lower pay without apparent negative consequences for the nonprofit. So, because sometimes reducing pay causes lower performance, and that's not what we found. We found that these nonprofits, if anything, perform better. And that's why we consider it as a good practice.
That's a good segue into my next question is, you say the nonprofits CEOs performed better despite the lower salaries. The difference with nonprofits and for-profits is it seems like the discussion within nonprofit circles is always how to determine performance for nonprofits and for CEOs. For stockholders, you know, you have your balance sheet and your stock performance. In nonprofit, how did you decide to choose? You looked at different things like administrative efficiency, which is sometimes some folks don't really consider that a good metric. But you also looked at volunteers and increases in contributions and such.
Yes, absolutely. So I do agree that it's much easier to measure performance in the for-profits, right? We all know what the stock price is, it's objective, and so on. For nonprofits, because they have a mission, they don't maximize somebody's value. They don't maximize the value to the donors, for example. It's not something that they are obliged to do. It's much more confusing how to measure their performance. Because of this, the literature has looked at the number of metrics. And we think that we have a reasonably good measures of performance, in particular because we look at government grants, and donor grants. And if the nonprofit is not doing well, if the nonprofit is not serving its mission, right, then donors presumably would understand it. Donors are relatively sophisticated. They think where to contribute their money. They want to have a warm glow feeling, right, after this. They want to feel good. And if they feel that their money is being misused, they probably wouldn't contribute it. That's why looking at donor grants makes sense as a measure of performance, because it encompasses other metrics that could tell us how nonprofit is doing. And the same story is about volunteers. Volunteers, they're not paid for it, right? They have to decide what they feel passionate about, whether they like what's going on in the nonprofit. And that's why looking at the number of volunteers also makes sense as a measure of performance. We did look at revenues per employee, sort of more accounting-based metric. We found that that increases as well. And we did look at administrative efficiency just because a number of studies have looked at that metric. And we found no change. Not positive, not negative, really no change in that metric. But three metrics showed an increase in performance and one metric showed no change. So overall, it seemed at least we can say that there were no negative consequences, but there were some positive ones. And that's why we think it was a good practice. On the top of that, we found that the CEOs worked longer hours at work. So they didn't sort of drop their jobs and said, like, look, you're not paying me, I'm not going to work, right? That's not what happened at all. So when we looked at the number of hours they work per week, we saw a modest increase in this metric. And that was relative to other executives at the same firms that were not sort of affected by these legislative changes and changes in pay as well.
And the hours worked, did that also come from all the different tax form 990s as far as just what they were self-reported on their tax forms?
Correct. And we did have to worry about the problems that, well, is it an informative metric, right? Maybe somebody pre-fills it and it's 40 hours for everyone. So we looked only at those nonprofits where it's meaningful, where the number of reported hours is different for different executives. It's just not the same meaningless number. So yes, there is this problem, but it does come from Form 990, as you pointed out.
I should also add that even if one is concerned that, oh, the hours are self-reported and maybe it doesn't mean anything, there is no reason to believe that for the same executive, before the act was passed versus after the act was passed, there should be a change in the informativeness of what he or she is reporting, especially when the CEO is also being compared to the hours of the other people in the same nonprofit reporting their hours as well. So if, for example, if there was some systematic change in informativeness in the hours in the nonprofit for the top executives, that would show up in the other executives as well. Furthermore, there is no sort of reason to believe that there would be a change in the way in which the reporting is happening. Even if someone thought that maybe something is changing, at the very least, what we can take away from the fact that we see greater number of hours worked as reported, there seems to be some pressure or motivation to show that they work longer hours. At the very least, we have to conclude that must be true. And even that is not necessarily a bad thing, because they were not showing that same number of hours earlier. They could have chosen to show more hours even earlier. So something changed after the act. And the important point is this: at the very least, they must feel the pressure to show that they work longer hours. But for other reasons that I mentioned, we feel that this actually does capture that they are working slightly longer hours. Although we find that this result, that they're working longer hours, is not an enormously big effect. They do work longer hours, but it's not huge. We definitely can say with more confidence that they are not reducing the number of hours for on average, mm-hmm. that is.
Good point. So the hours work didn't change when compared with other non-CEO executives, and I guess neither did the salaries.
We find that non-CEO executives at the New York nonprofits do not see any change in pay after the act relative to the non-CEO executives in other nonprofits, that is outside of New York, either in neighboring states or all over the country. And if anything, there might be a slight increase in pay, but it could be just a statistical artifact, some randomness there. But we find absolutely no evidence that there is any decrease in salaries or pay of the non-CEO executives at the nonprofits where we see the CEO's salary and pay go down.
If you like what you're hearing, share it with friends and colleagues on social media. Use the hashtag FreshResearch or retweet the Nonprofit Times link, and you'll be eligible to win a book from the NPT Library. Another way for folks to find the show, rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. For more than 30 years, the Nonprofit Times has been the leading business publication for nonprofit management. To subscribe, visit shopthenonprofittimes.com. You'll also find special issue coverage, relevant research like our salary and benefits report, and best nonprofits to work for, plus other special reports and webinars. And keep up with the latest breaking news and in-depth reporting at thenonprofittimes.com.
Do you think your organization is one of the best nonprofits to work for? Well, now you can prove it. Registration is underway for the 2022 Best Nonprofits to Work For Survey, a collaboration between the Nonprofit Times and Best Companies Group. The October deadline will be here before you know it, so visit bestnonprofitstoworkfor.com for more information and to register today. And now, more about nonprofit CEO pay with Ilana Babenka and Rick Sen. And when you compared state to state, did you compare New York State with just comparable peer states or just nationally?
We first compared it nationally just to take everyone into account. And then we compared it regionally. We compared New York to neighboring states, just the ones that sort of have the border with New York. And then we also compared New York to California, just because California is also one state that is large, sort of comparable to New York, and also has a large number of nonprofits. And again, sort of all these metrics show the same result. So it didn't matter which benchmark group you use for comparison purposes.
Mm-hmm. Just to add on, one might think that the nonprofits in New York are somehow quite different from the nonprofits all across the country. It turns out that on a whole host of observables, that turns out not to be true. In fact, if you take the whole pool of all the nonprofits outside of New York in the rest of the US, and you look at the distribution of the types of nonprofits, sizes of nonprofits, and many other observables, they seem relatively comparable. So broadly, it actually did make sense to us to compare the New York nonprofits to the rest of the nonprofits across the country, taken together into one pool. But one might still be concerned that there might be something special about the Northeast of the US. And that's why we also looked at comparing New York nonprofits to the ones in the neighboring states.
Yeah, I was thinking just cost of living wise and generally what I see on salary surveys about nonprofit compensation, New York, you know, versus say somewhere in the Midwest or the Dakotas, is going to be very different. More, like you said, California and Massachusetts and nearby states probably are more comparable or more similar to New York State.
Right. So while one might have that feeling, the data actually don't show, if you take all the nonprofits together, and do keep in mind that the typical nonprofit is quite a small nonprofit, both in New York and in the rest of the country. And that is where we also had this feeling that New York nonprofits are likely to be quite different. It turned out the data shows that is not quite the case. If we just look at all the nonprofits taken together in New York as one pool and compare it to the other pool of all the New York, all the nonprofits outside of New York, the pools do not look that different on a whole host of different things that we looked at. But I still agree that maybe we are missing something, and therefore I agree with your point that it may have made sense to just look at other nonprofits in the region, which is also what we did. And we find almost exactly the same sort of patterns when we change the comparison set to just the nonprofits in that neighborhood, which share a border with the state of New York.
Hmm. Were you able to look at or find any differences as far as sizes of nonprofits or different types of nonprofits? Like, say, were you able to split out arts and culture charities versus a hospital or a food bank?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Mark. So what we did find is that the effects on pay of the act were much bigger for commercial nonprofits and were smaller for charities. And that was interesting to us. And one potential interpretation is that the CEOs of charities maybe are more driven by the mission of the nonprofit, and maybe their pay is lower to start with, and they are sort of less affected by this excess pay to start with. But anyway, we did find that the pay reduced for both groups, but we did find a bigger effect in commercial nonprofits and non-charities. So that was the main difference. And we did look at hospitals and education and sort of other types of nonprofits. And generally the effects were similar across different groups in this dimension.
Can you just clarify, what are you referring to when you say commercial nonprofit?
So that's basically the nonprofits that get a large part of money from their revenues. So for example, a senior care that is done for a fee. It could be a nonprofit, but they take fees for their service. So that would be sort of an example of a commercial nonprofit versus a charity that serves, bowls of soup, hot soup to the poor, sure, and sort of doesn't charge any fee for these services and is financed by mostly grants from governments and donors.
Was there much different in the components of compensation as far as, say, base compensation versus bonus, deferred, non-taxable, all the different types reported on the 990? Was there a particular area of compensation or just overall compensation generally across the board that went down?
Well, that's a good question. So we did look at different types of compensation, and the salaries are the biggest part of compensation for nonprofits. They went down, but the decrease was rather modest, about 2%. As for other types, we did find that incentive pay and bonuses was the category that was strongly affected by this legislation. And that made sense to us because, it's a discretionary type of pay. That's up to the board to decide, whereas salary may be already written in some contract and sort of hard to change and really sticky. So we did find the bigger effect on bonuses, an order of 5% decline in those. And on the top of that, we found that even though, despite the fact that the bonuses declined, the pay overall became more sensitive to the performance of nonprofit. So it turns out that they started to pay these bonuses only when the nonprofit performed well, rather than basically regardless of the performance. So that was what we found. And we found also that the perks decreased also by a relatively large percentage as well.
Is there any way to quantify what 2 to 3% would be? Was there an average compensation overall that that you can point to for the charities?
Yes. So in our sample, it does come, as far as I remember, to about $12,000 for a CEO. But again, keep in mind that many nonprofits are rather small and their CEOs are not making millions. The average pay, maybe Zirik remembers it better, but I think the average pay is on the order of $600,000 for CEOs in our sample. We did find bigger effects for larger nonprofits, so that could, the effect could be on the order of $50,000 if we focus on the largest 500 nonprofits in the sample. So, but on average, it was about $12,000 effect.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the average pay for our sample CEOs is indeed $600,000, and the median is $350,000. So sort of the center, the 50th percentile guy is actually getting paid $350,000. And these are numbers to sort of keep in mind when one compares a $12,000 reduction in annual pay. And another thing to keep in mind is that this is a reduction in annual pay. So this is sort of a permanent effect. It's not a one-time reduction.
Any drawbacks to the research that you couldn't find, or things that you wish you could have been able to get to that may have improved it?
Yeah, one thing that would be nice to have is actually the metrics that boards use to determine how the CEO or executive director performed. So they do write sometimes notes in their form 990s that, we determined that the board, that the mission was advanced, or the revenues were high and that's why we paid a bonus. But it's quite sporadic information. It's reported on a voluntary basis. Not everybody does it. So it would be something nice for us to have, is basically how the board determines whether the CEO met the benchmark or not. So that would be definitely helpful. And then going more towards more recent years, like 2020, 2021, especially since nonprofits were hit so hard during the pandemic and some did not survive, that would be interesting as well to look what happened during these years.
So a couple of things that you already pointed out or brought up. Of course, one of the things is to do with the hours worked. We are not as confident about that increasing as we are about pay decreasing, but we are relatively more confident about the hours actually not going down. And as you correctly pointed out, one might still be suspicious about this self-reported number of hours worked. So one should take that with a grain of salt. On the other hand, this is kind of information that is usually not available very easily. So exactly the number of hours worked or how much effort the CEOs or executives are putting in. So this is in general quite difficult to get in terms of information. So it's not clear what one could realistically actually get in this regard. The other thing one should keep in mind a little bit is what we observe is that the act had the following effects. It reduced pay, it improved performance, it increased the sensitivity of pay to some of the performance measures, and to the extent we believe the number of hours worked, the number of hours worked by the CEO actually went up. Now, of course, we interpret all of these as related to each other or one leading to the other. And that makes sense from a theoretical perspective, as well as if we look back to research on for-profits, these are related in that context. However, one particular thing to keep in mind is these may be coming about through some separate mechanisms as well. So it is, for example, possible that ACT leads to reduction in CEO pay, but also it leads to increase in performance for other reasons, and not, it may not all be coming from the fact or from the same sort of channels that lead to reduction in CEO pay. So that is something worth keeping in mind. However, even if that were true, it would still be the case that we would conclude that the act was good for nonprofits, at least in terms of the fact that it, on the one hand, increased performance and on the other hand, reduced pay, even if these two were not directly linked to each other, meaning the reduction in pay and the increase in performance were not seriously sort of heavily intertwined.
Ilana and Rick, thanks so much for your time today. I'm really glad we were able to set this up, and I really enjoyed our conversation. So thanks so much for your taking the time today.
Thank you so much for having us.
It was a pleasure.
That's our episode for today. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share the Fresh Research link on Twitter or Facebook to be eligible to win something from the NPT Library. You can also share on social media with the hashtag #FreshResearch. And if you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Fresh Research, a podcast from the Nonprofit Times, spotlighting research and trends in the philanthropic sector. Till next time, keep up with us at thenonprofittimes.com for all your nonprofit news.